Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Connect segment, and I have Karen Bird, life coach, coming in with us today all the way from Arkansas. Get out your pads, get out many pencils, because she has great information for you. She is a life coach. She takes you there, and I think her topic is going to be on today, the art of doing nothing, which is my kind of thing. But you want to listen very, very closely. You want to take down notes. This is an awesome, awesome person coming in from Cross Country Connect all the way from Arkansas. But before we bring it in, let me give you something to think about, okay? And then we're going to listen to Professor Karen Bird, life coach.
Here's the reason why.
Don't do it.
gotta jump to it. I'm in a hurry, there's love to get.
Right, we have to jump to everything that we need to do, but you have to start with you. And on the line with us from Arkansas Cross Country Connect, we have, I call her my professor, Karen Bird, which is life coach, because she was my professor when I was getting higher education. So she will always be known as my professor and one of my best, greatest mentors. Karen Bird, life coach, are you on the line with us? Just waking up with Linda Machain.
I am, Miss Linda, and you know how I feel about that, that I always feel like I learn as much from you as you learn from me.
All right.
So here we are, keeping our cross-country connection. I'm so happy to be able to do this and continue to check in about every month or a little bit more just to see what's on your mind, and you always let me kind of explore what's on my mind and what's in my heart, and I really appreciate it, just, you know, being able to stop.
Yeah, we appreciate you, and I know it's busy. The time frame is different, but we make it work, and you know what we always say, each one teach one, and each one uplift the other, and that is the connection that we have, and we will always have. I just cannot wait to get there and get on that lake with those ducks, okay? You know, I don't have no ducks around me here, but I'm coming in to eat some of
that
your wonderful
offer,
food.
That offer is always... Yeah, that offer is always open, and you come on out, and I'm going to show you the water here and everything else. So our topic today was the art of doing nothing. I haven't had a lot of time to really study this because, you know, it's about reflection more than anything. And so what I've really done, and I'm if you don't mind, I'm going to talk about it a little bit, and then at the end we'll leave a list for your listeners and people who are interested in just taking this to the next step or pondering it some more. But I always use my own experiences and kind of what I'm going through to try to make it more real, or I hope make it more relatable. So I'm calling the talk, in addition to the art of doing nothing, it's sort of being, the subtopics are sort of being, doing, and not doing. Mm-hmm. And to get started today, you know, just to refresh why I like to plug in to Waking Up with Linda McShann is that our talks are about exploring the inner world. And as you know, or anybody that's heard us talk before, I've been on a personal journey to understand more about me and to try and retrieve memories and experiences of my life and my childhood to understand where I came from and how I have lived, but also to capture some of the stories of my life in writing and to learn how to do this in order to help others do the same. So I am currently working on my memoir, but I'm doing that in pieces, of course, by capturing stories first that eventually become chapters that will become the book, right? So
yes,
that explanation on how I help others through my life coaching practice is found on my website, which is my name. It's KarenBerg.com. That's Berg is B-E-R-G-H. With the H on the end for people who might actually want to take a look at the website. But I want to start today by saying, for some people, the creative expression of their lives, like being able to express themselves creatively, starts young, and maybe it's easy for them. But for me, I believe it's coming to me late in life, and it's kind of always been hard for me. I call myself a life coach, and I learned about and started exercising the principles of this way of living, which is living intentionally and being introspective through writing stories and journaling and what author Julia Cameron popularly called artist dates, where you stop for an hour, take an hour for yourself to do something creative and allow yourself to explore just a creative expression of something, even if it's as simple as, you know, looking for flowers, arranging them in a vase, and taking an hour to do that. It could be anything, really. But these practices of intentionally taking an hour or more out of your life to allow yourself the freedom and time to creatively express yourself and enjoy just living, that although these practices seem easy to do and they should be natural, surprisingly, they are not. These practices in everyday life, in fact, take practice themselves and have to be developed like so many other habits. Just from my own experience, because of the way I'm made, doing anything consistently and regularly, whether it's good for me or bad for me, is not easy. I'm just an inconsistent person. It's not my favorite thing about myself, but I'm trying to become more consistent. It's like creating a habit, a discipline of something that's good for you that is not, you know, like we do things that are good for us when we want to eat good or, you know, or when we want to exercise. But this exercise of taking introspection and getting in touch with yourself, not just with your creator or praying or the universe or whatever you do when you may have a daily meditation or prayer practice, but I mean really getting in touch with your own mind, which is hard because we're so outwardly focused. We're busy doing, and we're busy helping, and we're busy producing so that we can keep roofs over our head and food in the fridge. But then there's this extra step, at least for me there is, to get in touch with what I'm thinking and what's on my heart and get it out of me. And honestly, it's like, you know, your brain is operating at one level all the time, but then you stop and say, okay, brain, now I want to think about this. And if I want to think about this, I have to take time to, I hope this is making sense, but that introspection has to do with actually allowing those thoughts to flow where you're aware of them. And it gives you new insight, or it gives you a direction, or a something that takes you to whatever it is you're looking for. So here's more about that. Right now I have a day job, and I'm still working hard in my what they call the earning years, you know, helping solve problems and giving my talents or selling my talents in a way for other people's purposes. But I'm also in the active practice, now that I'm in my 60s, of learning to slow down, to need less, and to prepare for the years ahead. Now, I don't see myself actually retiring because I enjoy working and being social, being around other people. But for me, the word retirement, which a lot of people think of as like stopping working, for me, retirement has always meant that I will still explore and learn. But quite frankly, during that time, I will worry less and I will love more. Okay. And everybody's like, wait. What do you mean? You're still going to have worries. And what do you mean you're just going to start loving when you retire? No. But what I'm saying is that's my focus. And I'm a word person. So I think this is a natural progression of aging for me. I don't think that I've discovered anything revolutionary. And I know that others, especially people in my family, laugh at me and sometimes ridicule me because it seems like I'm calculating how to learn to relax when it should be so easy to just do it. But I'm wired differently than many people, and especially people in my family. And not only do I have to put my mind to being creative and relaxed in life, but I'm also actively learning and practicing how to let my heart and soul lead me more. Mm-hmm. And not just how to make more money using my brain to keep a roof over my head and food in the fridge. Okay, so let's say, you know, the first two-thirds of my life were about learning how to make money using my brain to keep a roof over my head and food in the refrigerator and roof over my kids' heads too. But now it's become for a different reason. I'm moving forward in this last third, if I'm lucky enough to live that long, you know, for another reason. So I am taking constant, intentional, and self-reflective steps to think about the steps in my life, of like where the path I'm on and where I'm going. So, for example, a really basic example for me was a deliberate action of mine to finally changed my Facebook title. You know, a lot of people do your Facebook, your friends, and sometimes the public. But it used to say, under my name, it used to say writer, consultant, coach. Okay, those are my titles. That's how I position myself in the world to help other people's purposes. But as I'm moving into this last third of my life and I'm being a little more selfish, a little more introspective, I'm saying, you know what? It isn't about people knowing that I can write, consult, or coach. And so what I changed it to say was, again, words are important. I just put people experiences. Okay, why did I do this? Well, for me, it's a signal to the world, the Facebook world anyway, the social media world, and to myself that this is my occupation now. So in other words, I'm in the active process of not trying to be something out there in the world. Instead, I'm learning to be me and just enjoy the process of relating to other people and experiences. Does that make sense so far?
Makes a lot of sense.
Does that make sense? Or?
It makes a lot of sense, and I don't want to stop the flow, but, you know, I write as you're speaking, and when you say people experiencing, and it's not really about the money, KB, I'll call you KB because we into that possessive verb, but I'm going to say KB at this time because it's like being me, and I've really never had that problem of being me. As you say, you know, we learn at an early age, you know, expression. Well, I had the opportunity to speak it, and also I was told and deal with the consequences after you say it, okay? So that was embedded in me at a young age. So I have no problem with expressing, but what I'm touching in and feeling here is where you are with that retirement, wearing less and loving more, okay? It moves into that. I have to teach others and to share because we're about caring and sharing. So as I reflect and go into that doing nothing stage, out of doing nothing, trying to get into the brain because, you know, mine never sleeps, what I find that when I relax down and when I just go into me, the creativeness that flows through my body is frightening. If there's a project or if someone asks a question, I've immediately thrown it on the canvas. I've taken it from the beginning to the end. Say if there's an event, persons are calling, they want to do that. Well, when I get the title of the event, I'm done with it. You know, it just, and the reason why I figured out how I can do that is because it's not about the money. It's about the give. And it's not about, it's always about you, but you change the title as you say, you know, you did things, use your brain to keep a roof over your head. Well, when you light a candle for others, your path is going to become wider and brighter, and you're going to keep that roof over your head. And I realized that when you can come out the, this is for me, I'll just share, when you can come out of the monetary, what I can gain or how much. Don't think about the money. Don't think about how it's gone, where it's coming from. Only think about what you're trying to give. And like you said here, what is it, people experience? It's about the people. So when we care and share, it's not about CNN over here, it's about the people experiences. Like you, come on, you always excite us. But from what you're saying, the art of doing nothing is not, how did you word it, to be? Or to say being, doing, and not doing, okay? And it is hard to do because you got all these things running at you, but I've learned how to zone in on it, you know, through I do my daily meditations, whatever I do. But what you're speaking of, it takes an extra step because you have to totally come out of everything and actually come out of yourself. It's, to me, I might be expressing it a little bit crazy. It's like an out-of-body experience. It's like these things are happening.
No, it is. It is. Well, I said it more like you have to get in touch with your own brain and your own thinking patterns, or at least the way my brain works. I do. I have to say, I have to consciously think about my thinking. That's very meta. But, you know, just think about what I'm thinking about, which, so if I, this is, I don't know if that's making any sense at all, but here's how, and it is, I loved what you said, Linda, about several things you said when you said you meditate and think and then you throw it on the canvas. It is like that. It's like you have to allow a blank space and let it flow for a while. And we've talked about flow and getting in the flow in our past podcast, but then at some point the flow produces the creative energy and the direction for you to throw it on the canvas. Something becomes real. Something starts to happen. The steps become clear. You connect with the people you need to connect with. You figure out what the next thing is. But it's that in-between state. So being is who you are. Doing is throwing it on the canvas. And then the not doing. The not doing is the hardest part for me. And that's why I'm thinking about that as I head towards, quote, retirement, which I don't see as any kind of retirement, but at least this way of showing up in the world. So because I was so intent all of my career on pitching myself, making sure that somebody paid me to give them whatever it was I could do, right, that I felt like I had to have a title to go with that. I had to have a job and a title and the benefits and blah, blah, blah. And granted, I actually do have a day job now, even though I consulted and was an adjunct part-time professor for years. But I actually do have a daytime job where I have that again. But what I've learned in the process of, living the most of my life up to this point is that my purpose in life is not out there somewhere. It's not somewhere outside of me, having this title. But it's simply, or leaving a legacy or becoming famous or getting known or whatever that. It's simply, for me, it's been simply bringing who I am to the table and learning to love who I am and celebrating my differences in a healthy way and never apologizing for them. And I wish I had learned this at a young age. I mean, I have a coworker that I share an office with now, and I'm amazed, and he's a millennial, and I'm amazed at how in touch with himself he is and how little he apologizes for who he is and just goes on and just basically when he walks in the room, he is who he is. And I'm like, dang, I wish I'd learned that when I was his age.
You take it or you know, leave it. I understand him totally. I understand where he is.
And I was never able to do that. I was always trying to please and serve and make sure other people were happy and not get fired. Do what you need to do to not get fired and
right.
All that stuff. Or not get on the wrong side of the politics and blah, blah, blah. So here's where I am now. As I'm saying, the focus of my thinking, believing, and being is that I just show up now. I don't try to be better than I am. I don't try to get recognition, and I certainly don't compete with others. The last thing you will see me do, and when younger women especially see me and we start working together, and they start, I can see that they're trying to compete with me to get attention
or
to claim my ideas or to do whatever,
because
you do that when you're younger. I find that I have grace about it because I know that I lived that life where I was trying to get ahead, and I've passed that. I've accomplished those things. I've matured. I know I'm more confident in myself or whatever. I don't need those things. So, in fact, and the other thing, this is the funny part that I'm realizing as I'm writing and journaling, is I'm worn out with heeding others' calls to, quote, find my purpose. Or to, quote, be the best that you can be, or to, quote, follow my bliss, or any of those other calls to a different way. It's exhausting. I'm so tired of trying to follow somebody else's way. And so in my Karen-ness, I call it my Karen-ness, I practice the principles of being me. And what that means is being me means simply contributing what I have and who I am, offering to the world how I think and what I'm good at. And I bring that wherever I go and whoever I'm with.
Right?
Okay, so what about this topic of doing nothing? Okay, segueing to the next. What about this topic of doing nothing? How does that fit in with just being yourself? Or how does that fit in with just showing up. So what is the art of doing nothing, and how can you honestly do nothing? I mean, we're always so busy doing. Is this not doing something that can be learned? It is something that Americans are not good at. The Italians call it dolce far niente, D-O-L-C-E-F-A-R-N-I-E-N-T-E. Dolce far niente, the Italians have been saying it for years. It means the sweetness of doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not being lazy. It's not the idea of not being lazy, but it is the idea of finding pleasure in idleness and relaxation. Finding pleasure in idleness and relaxation. What?
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked in the past, in our past podcasts, about staying in the flow. And that is about allowing your creativity to emerge because you make space for it. Like we were talking about earlier with meditation, then you throw something on the canvas. But the art of doing nothing, so we're going to try to tie these two ideas together. In the flow is staying in the flow to create is one thing. But the art of doing nothing, I think, has more to do with being fully present.
Mm.
Okay, and this struck me just the other day because somebody said it to me, and I went, what? Think about how you experience dogs. Dogs are fully present beings. They are tuned in to you, to their surroundings, and to every little morsel of life at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever looked into a dog's eyes?
Oh, yeah.
What do you see?
I see focus, I see love, I see if they're angry, but most of the time, because you know I love dogs, they're talking to you. They know when you're sick, they know when you're
thank
angry.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, they know it.
Yeah, dogs are fully present. They're giving you love. You said it, they're giving you focus, they're giving you attention. And when I say attention, I don't mean their affection. They do that too, but it's by attention I mean fully attentive.
Yes.
They are 100% locked in on you. And if you look in their eyes, they're locked in and your eyes lock and you go, dang. I mean, it can be a spiritual experience just in and of itself, especially if you know and love dogs like we do. So I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, well, if the art of doing nothing has something to do with being fully present and being attentive and loving and being focused. And if you use the idea or the experience of a dog's love and focus and attention is the way we can be with other people, that means stopping. That means arresting or stopping or pausing your own inclination to be busy or to be not present or to be distracted. And this is especially difficult. And I did start to look into the research, Linda, and the research on inattentiveness and distraction and fragmentation is huge right now because of the technology, because of social media and the disruption that technology has put into our lives. It's even changed the way our brains work. It's changed the way our children are learning and who they're becoming as people. So there's a lot of research and there's a lot of writing and speaking and learning going on right now about turning that off and unplugging or staying, unwired, so to speak, so that you can tune in to you and to your surroundings and to people, just like the puppy dogs do. Okay, so anyway, I don't have a lot of the research done yet, and we may not finish. I mean, we might not take a whole hour today. I don't know because I didn't have a lot of time to pack because I am.
Well,
I
was hoping that you would mention that because with you, what I like to do, Professor Bird, because it's that's so helpful, so educational. So,
do you want to know some of the sources?
We break it into parts. Yeah, we break down into parts.
If you want to know some of the sources, here's what I'm going to be looking into, and maybe we can build this as part of this series for our next podcast discussions, because I'm looking to a couple of the authors and researchers who've done this. One is a popular writer. She's actually an author and an artist, and her name is Jenny Odell, O-apostrophe-D-E-L-L, and she lives in Oakland, I believe, but she has written a book. She called the book with MIT. She published it with MIT Press, and it's called How to Do Nothing. And
okay.
It's called, and the subhead is called Resisting the Attention Economy. And that plays to this idea that I was talking about how this, because we're a capitalistic society, every corporation and anybody from celebrities, hip hop artists, politicians, you know, people like me, life coaches, anybody selling anything is trying to get your attention.
Yes.
And they're doing that through social media and technology and advertising and blah, 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 blah. So Jenny Odell has studied this and written about how to do nothing. And then what I'm really interested in finding, and gosh, you can't get a copy of it. I looked everywhere when I was starting my research on this topic, but she gave a commencement speech at Harvard's School of Design. And I don't know if you remember, but I also follow Stanford, the School of Business, because that's where I got the life design process.
Mm-hmm.
But at Harvard, they have a School of Design. And she gave the commencement speech, and the title was Inhabiting the Negative Space.
Okay.
And negative space in art, and design is what's not on the page. It's like you were talking earlier about the blank canvas. Okay.
Yes.
So the negative space is what's in between where there's actually a visual or something that's been created. So inhabiting the, I can't get a copy of it right now, but I will, and we'll talk about it when we go down the road. But the Jenny Odell has done both of those, the How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy, and Inhabiting the Negative Space. I would like to get a copy at least of that second one, because like I said, it was a speech at a commencement ceremony, and it's not as long, and it's very illustrative. And this also plays there's other resources that if your listeners are interested in the topic that besides the attention economy, there also is obviously the ancient wisdom of Taoism, which is, you know, Chinese, T-A-O, it sounds like D, but it's T-A-O. The Tao is famous and has been around for centuries. About similar type topics of taking a deeper and more careful look at everything in life, and you know, allowing your spirituality to grow from illumination.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's a start. Those are three sources that are a start, and I mean I could go on. There's a lot that it has been written and that is still being written on the topic of this. The premise of how when you successfully do nothing, you are being put in a state of anticipation for opportunity or creating,
mm-hmm.
and how periods of activity can become reimagined basis for design or creation or something new. So if you think about it, the research talks about how the opposite, it's like the opposite of inattention and fragmentation. So we were talking about the dogs are anything but inattentive and fragmented. They're the opposite, that they're attentive and focused.
Dogs, I'm going to send you a clip that was sent to me. Dogs move purely on emotion. And I say that because, you know, I attend a lot of dog shows. I'm into the competition, and I attend a lot. But I'll share this with you. Flew up north, and so the breeder, you know, had a baby running, and so I flew in because these babies come from my original baby, which was purchased, and she has nothing but champs out there, and she never been in the ring, but she produced six generations. So each time there's a show, and I could go, I would go. So I flew in on a Friday, and we went in, and that Friday, the baby got out there with all the males, and he kept his nose to the ground, right? Well, I noticed that they put the females out there before the males, so what do you expect? So the next day, I brush him, I, you know, sprints him, I'm there. So I wore all purple. Mm-hmm. So I got down in his face, and they're very attentive. Mm-hmm. They're very smart. I say, look, I spent a lot of money to come in here, and you see this color I got on? This is the color I want you to get. I says, I will not brush you. I will not sprint you. I do not want your nose on the ground. I want you to suck ass. You know that baby brought back that purple first place? They understand. They move on your, how can I put it, not your big, but your command. Dogs move on command. And the reason why they can move on command is because they're just that focused then. With where you are, same with an individual. And you say, as Tal said, you know, not the surface. It's not the surface. You have to go deeper. So when you're in conversation with an individual, you got to give them your full attention. Once they know that you're totally tuned into them and they know, you'll get a wider opening and a bigger story than you ever thought that you could get. It's simply because you focused in on them. Working at, you've been a life coach. I've worked on transformation coach. When I was in my classes, I would look at my coaches and say, do y'all have teeth? Do y'all smile? You know, is it that serious? Okay. I says, well, the best thing to do is take this all the way to the end. I need to find out for myself. But when I got on the other side of the table, it all came to me. They were so focused into those attendees that they didn't even know who they were. I had to experience it. So when you say focus, when you do nothing, place it in a space, it's a space of opportunity. Negative space in art draws its own picture. And in the
ooh,
beginning
I
art.
Like that.
Yeah, it does. In beginning art, I took an art class. When I went back to school, I have a friend that was an artist. He said, Linda, you're losing your creativity. Go take an art class. I said, I can't draw a straight line. I got in that drawing class. I had to do a replica of Van Gogh. I still have him, and I look at it. And I laugh myself sometimes, who did that? I love it so much that I won't get it trained. But I did that to detail, because that art brought me through, but I also had to do paintings about negative space. It's not what you see, it's what you don't see that brings the picture. And in order to not see it, or in order to see it, you got to do nothing with your brain and totally focus in. I love this topic. We're going to go, we got to do parts of this. You, this one, Professor Bird, we have to keep moving.
You always kill me. You always kill me when you do this, because when you start riffing, it's like I'm taken right back to where we were at the University of Laverne when we were standing in the classroom, and I'd have to deliver a certain amount of content every, you know, class for, I don't know, however many hours we were there. But then you'd be thinking, and I'd be watching your face, and then after we finished class, we would stop and have to talk some more, because something had sparked and for you, and then you would come up and say this and that, and I would be like, oh my gosh, you're right. Oh my god, oh my. And it was just like, I just love how you take whatever my words are and a little bit of direction, and then you come back. It's like, to me, it's like jazz music. We're like writing a song together. I just love how you do that.
Well, you were that kind of professor where you would make it so real. You would make it so real. You would get the attention. See, you got our attention. And once you got the attention, then you would put it out there. And you were so authentic with your teaching method. You were you. You didn't move from the book. You moved from life, okay? And that was exciting to me. And I would be watching you, and I would be listening because I figure, if you notice, I would always look like you would see. I can't hide my facial expression, but I felt that if I knew everything, I would be standing where you were. But since I'm sitting on the other side, I'm here to learn. So when I'm here to learn, I have to listen very closely. So I would catch a title or catch a word, and I would come back to you, not to say what, not in it, not to define what you were saying, but to clarify what you were saying. I needed clarity.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're saying that? Oh well, what do you think about this? Well, can we do it? Yeah. That's what. But you're an authentic teacher. You're an authentic educator.
Yeah.
You get to the
but
soul
you're always,
of it.
You're always helping me. You're always helping me too, though, Lynn. And this is probably why we're such a mutual admiration society. But even the things you said today, when here's a couple of words that really struck through to my heart about how dogs move on command.
Yeah.
And that's because they're 100% tuned in on you, and they have trust, and they want to perform. I mean, most dogs are performance dogs or working dogs of some kind. They've been bred to be man's companion or woman's companion. I'd say man's, but you know what I mean. And they are just, they're there for us. And if we thought of ourselves as tuning into other people and experiences that way and moving on command, because somebody is telling me, I need you to do this right now. And I don't mean it in a spiritual way where, you know, you're subjecting yourself to a higher power or anything like that. I mean giving people what they need in that moment, because your you-ness is your purpose in life. Who you are is what you give to other people, and that is why you were born. That is why you inhabit the planet. And if I can just, if anybody wants to work with me as a life coach, that's the thing I want them to know more than anything else, is we forget the value of who we are. We take for granted our gifts, and we don't give ourselves enough credit for the contributions that we make to other people's lives, even if it's just a word in a class, you know, a dang nonprofit marketing class. Sometimes a word or a sentence or a thought can be profound and can help people make a breakthrough or help them draw some new insight. We are human beings on the planet giving, taking, giving, taking, giving, taking with one another, and it's constant. And I like to reach out to other people to have those experiences because I like to give, but I also like to receive.
Sure you do. We all do.
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
But you know,
you know, and
Professor, not cutting you off, when you're talking about giving and receiving, there are givers and there's takers in life. And when you have a heart, see, you have a heart. I'm a giver.
We've talked about heart people.
Uh-huh. Takers look for givers, okay? But when you give, you begin to recognize who you're giving to. You have to be careful who you give to. That means pull back the energy. That means being very observant. But when you give, you will always receive. And when you say about we don't understand our value, see, when you know your value and you quit blocking yourself with moving with less than your value, you're going to get stuck. But when you step in and say, look, I need this to do this, and I know that I can do this, things change. That is that command. It, when I say command versus begging, or command versus pleading, when you go to someone to beg for a sandwich, they give you what they want to give you. But when you go to someone and demand the type of sandwich you're looking for, they're going to give you that, or you move on to the next table. It's about, like you're saying, knowing who you are and what you give, and not only being a giver, give and take. See, it's a two-way street, but I find in this society that many people don't know but one way. So as I mature, and I've never been one about title and stuff, because I told them I had one, and I can't mention the title I told them I had, and I was bona fide with it, right? I have a title. I'm not caught up on that. I'm not here to be your fan. I'm not here to impress you, because my mother told me at an early age, if you're easily impressed by others and you waste your time impressing others, you're going to get screwed every time. I learned that at an early age. So what you see is what you get. Happy for you because you're in that position or you have all of that going on. I don't care about what Joe is doing across the street or what he drives. You know, if I want to ride that well, I'll ride with him. And my motto for 2022 is walk in your own shoe, period. If you walk in your own shoe, your feet won't hurt because you're going to get the shoe that fits. If you're out there trying to walk in somebody else's shoe, it's no telling what your feet going to feel like because you didn't buy it for you. You're trying to walk in those. So the reaching out, the giving, I say iron wears out. It wears out. You can give, 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 and when you say you'd like to receive, you find you're not getting that back, you move on. You hate to do it because you're not a selfish individual. See, selfish people are takers. But when you're a giver, there's not a selfish bone in your body because you're trying to bring happiness to others. And in order, when you bring happiness to others, it brings happiness to yourself. But you also have to realize that at times everybody don't want to be happy, okay? So you have to pull back. So when you say give and take and you are here with that purpose, you're placed here. And when we speak of purpose, you know, I do that lecture on purpose. And I tell people, they say, I'm standing in my purpose. I said, no, you're not. You're moving toward it. We're placed here with a purpose, and you have to travel that road, and you have to get to that destination. And hopefully, when your purpose is complete, most people are not even here to see it. You leave a legacy. Some people are. But purpose is what you are. Nothing will come to you if you keep short-shotting yourself on your value. That's where what I'm getting out of this conversation with you. Am I on the right track, Professor Berg? You see how you pull
you always do better than I do. You always do it better than I do, and I love the way you coin the phrases and your language. If you walk in your own shoes, they will fit. And knowing who you are and what you give is how you spend your life. It's a two-way street, but many people only know one way. I just love it. I was just writing that down while you were talking. It's beautiful. We're gonna write a book together someday, Linda. But so I want to finish on this idea. What about the concept of it's beautiful? What about this concept of not doing? Not doing. Okay. So the not doing part. It's odd to me that it took a pandemic for people to slow down, to relax, and to try in America and maybe other places on the planet and to try to find some freedom in their busy, busy lives. In China, the principles of Taoism, like we talked about, are ancient, and they permeate the Chinese culture, but they elude Western civilizations like ours. And the Chinese terms are actually Chinese terms. Here's one, Wu Wei, which is spelled W-U-W-E-I. Wu Wei means do nothing in Chinese, and Wu Bu Wei means do everything. And those words, Wu Wei, Wu Bu Wei, are well known and understood in their way of being. And other cultures know much more about this concept than our typical American capitalistic culture does. Today and through the pandemic, we were hit over the head with our own need and, in fact, a widespread thirst for an alternative approach to life and a longing for health, tranquility, and spiritual liberation. We saw this, and I monitor trends. It's one of the things I do as a writer, and I'm writing and reading and searching for trends and understanding what people are thinking and talking about all the time, and this is what's been happening. But why did it take a horrific pandemic to make us stop and smell the roses and to appreciate our lives? What in America can we change? What can we do every day to change the way we live? And I'm also tracking this idea through media and other, is can we sustain this change? What's been brought about since the pandemic is the need to create more freedom and more space for ourselves and to love our families and get outdoors and, you know, to resist the pressure to, quote, succeed the way America demands that we succeed. So honestly, if you look around, the pandemic has created so many opportunities. I mean, in addition to, sadly, you know, tragedies and forcing a lot of unwanted change on us as Americans, it has also created these amazing opportunities for creative Americans and entrepreneurs more than ever to make new things, solve new problems and all that. But you know, so it's been a two-sided coin. It's been horrific and it's been wonderful, and it's forced us to look at the way we live and do things. So what are we talking about? What does freedom to do nothing look like? How do you find pleasure in idleness and relaxation? Do you stop and smell the roses? Do you watch the sunset or watch the sunrise? Do you take a walk? Do you take a nap? Do you meditate? Do you walk a labyrinth? It could be all those things and none of those things. And what I wanted, when I was thinking about this before we got together, I was thinking, you know, well, the words that came to me were the songs, the words, the lyrics from a song that was written and produced in 1969. I would have been, you know, 10 years old. But I'm sure I saw this Walt Disney movie, Baloo the Bear, was an animated character who was real laid back and sang this song as a mentor to Mowgli. And Mowgli was the little kid that was lost in the jungle in the Jungle Book. And actually, it was a book first, of course, and then it became a Disney movie, an animated movie. And as Mowgli is finding his way through the jungle, are you there? Are you still there? Linda, I can't hear you. Are you still there?
I muted out for a minute, but I'm hearing you.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
I was muted out.
Okay, okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah, the sound changed, so I wasn't sure. Okay, so in this story where Mowgli in the Jungle Book is learning from Baloo, Baloo encourages Mowgli to take it easy because he's too uptight or whatever. So this idea of doing nothing, I just wanted to share some of the lyrics. And Louis Armstrong recorded the song too, and I think that we're going to be able to play that out for your listeners today at the end. And again, this is about 1969, but the part of the lyrics that I'm interested in, then when I tell you about part of the lyrics, I'm going to recite them, but then after that, I'm going to leave you with a quick list because I know we need to kind of pack it up and get out of here. So the lyrics are, he says, Baloo is singing along, you know, look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. And this song is something that we all grew up with as kids, and everybody sings, everybody, my family and friends, we all sang it. But there's a part where he says, the bear says, fall apart in my backyard. Because let me tell you something, little britches. If you act like that bee acts, you're working too hard. And don't spend your time looking around for something you want that can't be found. When you find out you can live without it, and you go along not thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
So the bare necessities, the lyrics of that song when I was 10 years old, and I love it. I love coming back to that song and going, see, Baloo the Bear knew what he was talking about. He's a big old, you know, big old big belly, you know, funny, kind of lazy but smart bear.
Okay.
And I believe I can learn from Baloo. And here's the list I want to leave you with. So number one, to do nothing, or to transition from being and doing to this new space of leaving negative space, let's do this. Here's the list. Get yourself a mentor who shows you how. Like, it could be the dog that reminds you to be present like she is. Or for me, it's a boyfriend who fishes. He's really good at this. Number two, give yourself permission to relax or to create negative space in your life. Three, strive for simplicity. Number four, reduce clutter and things.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, and this is a Baloo the Bear, this is the lyrics, forget about your worries and your strife.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about your worries and your strife. That's part of the song. Okay. Number six, wander, roam. Take time to discover nature up close. Number seven, don't make things harder than they need to be. Number 8, need less. Number 9, do less. And number 10, be you. That's all I have today.
You know what, Professor Bird? You know, I always enjoy talking to you because whenever we finish, after I listen over and over and over and over, I always go back because I use a lot of you when I'm speaking, especially when persons are going into transition, you know, how to reflect, restructure, rejuvenate. That's all you. That's the way that you bring your information to persons, and it's right on because they can relate to it. To go through, and now here we have these 8 ways of doing nothing, and I like the idea of blue because when persons are talking with me, and I just need to know if I'm expressing this the proper way. Oh, well, I'm doing this and this and that and this is happening and this is happening. And, oh, well, you should have been there and you should have already. You know how they come with that judgmental telling you what to do. And I just look at them and say, do you know about the story with the tortoise and the hare? And I shut up because, see, that hare was busy, right? That tortoise was laying back, learning. But who won the race? I just say, do you know about the story of the tortoise and the hare or the hare and the tortoise? I have a way you want to put it. And I just be quiet because I want you to think that works for you. That don't work for me. And I'm not going to plan anything on a Monday and expect it to be expedited on a Friday because I'm a planner. And because of sitting down doing nothing, getting lazy and letting the brain go, when I approach you with it, I've taken it from the top to the end. I have not overlooked anything. Then you start with those plans. There's when you say the pandemic, what could we do? This is new beginnings. Things are never going to be done same way that they was done. So the creativity, yes, there's a lot of entrepreneurs, and it's a lot of people out there still doing it the old way. One, they take, and not give. It's two ways. It's collaboration across the board with everyone. So you and I collaborate as friends, as educators, and all of that. So those relationships are very, very important. But individuals are still sort of like stepping in, running them. So what can we do? My first thing is to learn how to be kind, number one. And number two, to learn how to care. But you have to do self-care first before you can care for anybody else. On the plane, they say put your mask on first before you try to help anyone else.
That's right.
So it goes. All we're seeing or all I'm hearing, even with the art of doing nothing, is it all starts with you. See, you set the pace. You put the commands out there. When you beg, you get what you get. When you command, that confidence, you know what you want, and you know how to ask for it. So I don't know about others out there, but like I said, 2022 is for me. And when I say that, not saying it selfishly, like you said, you were spinning your brains, getting everybody else where they have to go. The ladder at the top, I'm tired of pushing those to the top of the ladder, and I'm staying on slack number 3. So I have to change up. This is a new beginning. So that purpose that we're striving for to get to that destination of our purpose leads in many, many, many directions. And you have to travel on it in several types of vehicles. It's just not one way to get there. And before you can even know the best vehicle to get on, you have to start with you to see if you know how to ride that bicycle, skateboard, or jet plane, or whatever. So when I talk to you, you throw me in a new mode. And I have to say it to you because I want it out there, because that's exactly what you do. We are so appreciative. I know it's crazy there. We're on a different time frame. But when I put out Cross Country Connect, I always bring you in because you are an educator. You're caring, and the most important, you make us think. And that's what it's all about. Move those brain cells. I'm not talking about getting up out the bed and stomping on the floor. I'm speaking of waking up with Linda McShann is about those cells moving in that brain, okay? and
breaking up with Linda Michelle.
Oh, you said it, girl.
Michelle.
Ooh.
Say,
whoa.
Breaking up.
Sharing care with love all through the land. We educate, communicate, and collaborate.
We give, showing others how to live.
We care with love all through the land.